Okay, I think we are finally live. Welcome in the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton, struggling with technology. Supposed to be joined by Steven Elastin at any moment. We're on another platform, which is a failing platform, apparently, now, having given us all kinds of issues. So give us a moment here. Steven will be joining us shortly. Can't even speak either. I'm so frustrated, but I do apologize for all the delays. This is where we're at. Here we go. We got Steven now. Boom. What's up, Steven?
Hey, Mike. It's good to talk to you. Finally, our connection has finally landed here.
Yeah, so we're back on StreamYard. It's the platform I prefer, Steven, quite honestly, because it actually works over the other one I was using. So appreciate, looks like the viewers are starting to file in here. So, Steven, I already did the little intro here. How you doing, buddy?
Mike, I'm doing great. It's good to talk to you as always here on our SEC After Dark. I think we got a good show planned tonight. I'm always excited, encouraged every week when we get to talk some SEC ball, especially when we got spring practice going on across the league. We're getting close to that transfer portal, that second transfer portal window. So always a good time in the SEC. And heck, even Lane Kiffin added another Mississippi State coach as a tie to be an analyst now. So I don't know what you think about that, but that could have been the funniest thing possible is on April Fool's for Lane Kiffin to like say Dan Mullen is joining the Ole Miss staff. So.
Yeah, I mean, he's not far from it. You know what? So, right. Wild times down in Oxford that now Lane Kiffin, you know, he is the portal king, but he's also kind of now the coach rehab that Nick Saban was in the SEC. So, Steven, again, credit to you once again for coming through with another terrific show topic idea. We're going to be debating realistic expectations for all 16 SEC teams. That was, again, that's credit to you for coming up with the show topic. And as we have been doing, we're gonna go in alphabetical order. Unless someone throws us a donation, then your team will jump to the front of the line. So not something that you have to do, but something we would appreciate. So we'll get into that in just a second. But two things before we get into it, Steven. There was an explosive report from The Athletic about an hour before we jumped on here. They're considering some kind of super league with 70 teams, seven divisions of 10 teams, and there's relegation, there's promotion. Basically, you know, if you're Vanderbilt, I don't think it's going to be quite like that, but think of it like that, where if you're not carrying your weight, you can get kicked out. If you're a lower level team like Central Florida, who I guess now they're Big 12, so they are big league, but you can work your way to the top as well. What was your thoughts on a 70 team super league if it were to come to that?
Mike, I hate this idea. Anytime that you get more greed, you get more money, you get more private equity involved in college football, no. Get me out of it as fast as possible. I did think that report was interesting, though, because you did know if, you know, you kind of had to sift through it a little bit, but it doesn't sound like the Big Ten or the SEC are quite on board with this. I don't think they've taken a meeting from this group of people that's kind of getting this together. I will say there is a kind of under the radar bit to this, which is there is some things that college football has to worry about. And there's all these lawsuits and all these, you know, what to do with the transfer portal and all that stuff. And there is a need to resolve it. I don't think it's through getting all these people together to kind of slice up the conferences and to groups of, I think there'd be seven groups of 10 teams.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to all the other teams? Like, so is Vanderbilt and Tennessee not in the same conference as Ole Miss and Mississippi State in the same conference? So I am totally out on this because I think you are tearing away what makes college football, to me, the greatest sport in the world is all the regional rivalries, all the things that, you know, we enjoy so much would just be sliced up by money and private equity. So I am not a fan of this at all.
Right. And just to be clear, this is not like this is official. It's not that this is exactly happening by any means or anything like that. And apparently, according to that article, the SEC and the Big Ten are more or less against this. So if you don't got the SEC, you don't got the Big Ten, you don't really got anything to begin with. But who knows? I mean, this it could be where things go. It could be to where maybe, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC can be swayed if more power thrown their way. But just interesting. It's interesting nonetheless that this is being debated, because I think we all know it. We're headed somewhere, but where, no one knows for sure. And this is the first time that I've actually seen someone kind of put out an outline, so to speak, of where the sport could be going. But just interesting to think about.
Something else to keep in mind with this is the playoff contract was just, you know, with ESPN is basically just kind of signed recently, I think, for the 2030 or so. So in some respects, there's probably not going to be a lot of, you know, movement imminent on this. Like, it seems like it's down the road, but I think if you're a college football fan, I think it's something to keep an eye on. I don't think it's anything that's going to come to the doorstep of the sport in the next couple of years, but there is a need to resolve a lot of these things, and it could impact the sport in ways. It's just that I just don't think that 70 teams and promotion and relegation and giving private equity a cut of this would be a good idea. I mean, Chris Del Conte, the AD of Texas, kind of said it best. I mean, private equity comes in. They're not coming in to just give you a bunch of money. They want a profit, and they're going to be making, finding ways to do it. So, yeah, no, this is not a good thing for college football right now.
All right, the only other thing real quick, Stephen, because I won't have a chance to speak with you on the show before the weekend, but we're going to get into the realistic expectations, and we're going to start with Ole Miss because Rusty gave us a donation. But before we get there, real quick, can you give us – I blew this one too, Steven. Steven's basically the show at this point in time. But he reminded me, hey, Saturday, we got us a spring game, Auburn. It's on the 6th here, Saturday, April 6th, 2 o'clock Eastern, 1 o'clock Central. Unfortunately, not going to be on traditional broadcast. You're going to have ESPN or SEC Network Plus to view it. But can you give us any kind of keys, anything in particular that you'll be looking to see from Auburn going into year two under Hugh Freeze?
Yeah, I think the most important storyline for me still remains the passing game. That is quarterbacks and receivers. And honestly, in a spring game setting, you will see offenses and head coaches sort of tailor the game to be very high scoring. And it's also very friendly to the quarterbacks, depending on what kind of, you know, you may ask your defensive coordinator to don't play this certain coverage, basically play basic. And we just want to see live what our quarterbacks and receivers do. That may be what Auburn does. That's to me is this is an important kind of couple weeks for Auburn's offense, because you have that second portal window coming up starting April 15th, 16th. Does Auburn need to go into the portal to get a quarterback? It's not necessarily going to make Auburn feel 100% better. But I think if Peyton Thorne in the passing game looks really good on Saturday, it's a bit of a confidence boost that maybe they don't need to go out and get a starter in the portal. I think another thing to watch will be Cam Coleman. The development of him this spring has been one of the biggest storylines. Auburn's had some injuries at receiver as well. How is that Thorne-Coleman connection? Because I think that could be something that really helps this offense take off. So for me, all about the passing game, quarterbacks, and then on defense, get a look at those defensive backs. There's a ton of turnover this year in the secondary for Auburn. So kind of a first look at some new faces there.
Yeah, a lot of new faces there on the Plains. Can't wait to see it. And I may be in the minority, Stephen, but I think this is a big year for Hugh Freeze and company. I mean, my goodness, we ain't going year three, year four anymore. Not in the SEC. It's playoff or bust seemingly across the conference. But all right, let's get into it. Oh, we're getting donates. We're getting a bunch of donations here, Steven. So we got a couple teams on deck. So our first one, Cousin Rusty, gave us a couple bucks for Hottie Toddy. So realistic expectations. Let's start with Ole Miss, Steven. What do you got for the Rebels?
So I am going college football playoff appearance.
Ooh.
And 10 victories this year. Perhaps even a win or two by Ole Miss in the college football playoff. I think we when you mentioned Auburn and how kind of critical it is, I think it's also kind of the same thing for Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. They went in to go to the portal to get the top or second, third portal class, depending on where you look. They've got a standout group of transfers coming in that could really fix that defense. The second year of Pete Golding, Lane Kiffin has taken the steps that he needed to fix this program, especially to fix the defensive side of the ball. We know they can score points offensively. And you look at that schedule, it is a schedule that they should be able to get to the college football playoff. So I think the all-in, plus the returners that Ole Miss has, and the schedule to me says this is a team that is needs and is poised to take that next step. So I'm going 10 wins in the college football playoff.
Realistic expectation. I don't know about that, Steven. They've never made the college football playoff. He's Lane Whiffen. Jackson Dart, horribly overrated. Ole Miss never beats anybody worth anything. They talk a big game, and then they just drop it when they face Alabama, Georgia, insert elite team. They don't do anything.
I think what sets up the best about their schedule this year is they should be probably 5-0 before they go into that road trip against South Carolina. Then they get LSU. They also play Georgia. But when I'm looking at their schedule, I think that Ole Miss should be favored in at least 10 of those games. I mean, I could see the road trip to Florida late in the season being tricky. In the SEC, you go on the road and play at South Carolina. And same thing, we saw what happened at Arkansas a few years ago. Those are tricky road trips. But I just think that if you're a team like Ole Miss that wants to capture this momentum, and we're in this new era of the college football playoff where there's 12 teams, the sort of circumstances, you've got a returner, a quarterback who's one of the best in the country. They've got the firepower at receiver, and they've got the pieces on defense to improve. So I think, to me, it would be underachieving if they finish like 8-4 and or 9-3 outside the college football playoff. I think that should be the expectation given they're sort of all in this year.
Well, Steven, I was just setting you up because I exactly agree with everything you just said. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a disaster if it's a 9-3. I mean, I think the only team that realistically, and again, that's what we're trying to do here. Realistic. I mean, we got Lane Kiffin out here. I don't know if you saw it yet, Stevie. He's out here saying, I'm taking it easy on these guys because I know we're going to play more games vis-a-vis going a deep run in the college football playoff. I mean, they are expecting that. So absolutely. I mean, I think they're probably going to go 11-1. Type year. I mean, I don't like to make predictions, but I guess we're doing that realistically. I think it's fine to say 11-1, 10-2. That is the standard now at Ole Miss. A couple of things that I want to cite this entire time we're doing this, Steven. I mean, returning production, they are fairly low on both. Offense, number 6 in the SEC. Defense, they are 13th in returning production, but this does not factor in the portal. So, I mean, they're aided so heavily by the transfer portal and that schedule. I mean, there's not going to be many teams that can play to their level. I truly don't think. So I think this is the best time to be an Ole Miss Rebel that I can remember. And I know we had some highs under Hugh Freeze, but we were inconsistent. I don't think we're getting that. It just feels like the guys that have come back, Steven, too, they're coming back on a mission. They didn't come back to get an NIL check. They came back to win SEC and a national championship. I'm not saying they're the pick to win the national championship, but I do believe they are a national championship contender. And I think that's all you could ask for right now.
Yeah, it really is. And I think just coming off of last season, the fact that they posted 11 victories, you know, it's the best mark under Lane Kiffin. You know, 11 victories is pretty good considering the history and track record of Ole Miss in terms of wins. But with the pieces that they have, when you have a difference maker like Jackson Dart at quarterback, and yes, they did lose Quinshon Judkins, but if they get Henry Parrish or another running back, I think they're going to be adequate enough on the ground. Their receiving corps is going to be really ridiculous this year too. I mean, you throw in Juice Wells with some of the guys they have coming back. Scoring points is not going to be a problem. It's really on defense is where I think we need to see this team take a step forward. The returning production is low, but at the same time, the volume and the quality of transfers makes me feel better about that. But with this, like I said, with this new era, it's an opportunity for teams like Missouri. It's a team like Ole Miss. And if these teams, let's just say they do get in the playoff, I don't think that when they're hosting a playoff game potentially in round one and then going on to round two, they're going to be a really dangerous matchup if they're playing the Big 12 champ or the ACC champ. So I think if you're Ole Miss, there's not only an opportunity to get in, there is an opportunity to make some noise this year given what they have coming back.
Mm-hmm. All right, another donation from Cousin Wesley. He's a Tennessee fan, so we'll do Tennessee next. Cousin Aaron Harmon, he gave us $10. He says Mizzou is trash, but he didn't say who his team was. I think he's Arkansas. Aaron, chime in. We'll get yours after Tennessee. So Tennessee, Stephen, what is a realistic expectation for the Vols in your mind, year three under Josh Heupel?
So I went with 9 victories here. You know, let me take a step back here.
Are we saying in the first 9 games?
I debated 9-3 or 10-2. So you can tell me I'm crazy. I think considering the first year quarterback, I think given there's still some question marks on defense, the early over under on this team, I think opened up at 8.5. I think it's up to 9.5 now. Tennessee schedule is pretty favorable though. I mean, when I look at that there, I think the start of the season, the neutral site game against NC State on September 7th, the road trip to Oklahoma, they get Florida and Alabama at home. It really sets up well. So I wrestled with this, Mike. You can tell me I'm crazy. I settled on 9-3, and I think they should be a playoff contender. I don't know if they'll get in, but I think they should absolutely be in the conversation. I'm open to changing my mind too on 9 or 10 wins. So
yeah, I think I'm glad you said that, Stephen, because I think some people were expecting me to go full homer and say, and I've been saying it, you know, I think this is a team that can make the college football playoff, but I think realistically, I don't know that. It's not fair to put it all on one player, but obviously, you know, the quarterback, we all know how important that is and everything. But if Nico's elite, then I have full confidence they're going to make the college football playoff. And I'm not even saying he's not. You know, he could still be elite and you know, maybe something could happen. But there are unknowns there. You know, how good is the defense? Can they continue to take a step forward? Or with a completely new set? We always get enamored with new guys, Steven, where we're going to be fine. We're going to be even better. But we blew up the entire secondary. The secondary was not good. But just because you bring in new guys, transfers and young sophomores and freshmen, doesn't mean that they're going to be any better. I mean, they could conceivably be worse. This time last year, Stephen, Florida fans were like, we got rid of Grantham. We got rid of the old era defense. We're going to be awesome. They're even worse now. You know what I mean? So you can take steps back. It's not always linear. If it is linear on defense, if Nico is what he's cracked up to be, no problem. No problem buying Tennessee, 10-2, 11-1 type season. Georgia, Alabama, those games loom large at Oklahoma. But I think realistically, I think you kind of you hit it, 9-3. I think because also being a Tennessee grad, I could tell you, Stephen. I mean, you look at these games we're talking about here: NC State, Oklahoma, Florida. I think most Tennessee fans expect all these are wins, but we also know that every year we count games like this as a win and somehow Tennessee blows it. So, and that's if you blow one of those, then you have to beat an Alabama. You have to win in Athens, which hell, no one does. I mean, what do they have? A 25 game winning streak down there in Athens. So it's not inconceivable, but it's just you make it significantly tougher. So there's very little margin for error in what we're talking about. I think you kind of hit it. I think 9-3 type. I think that is realistic, what you should hope for or expect, not hope to be even better. And you can get there, but there's just a couple unknowns that we don't know about this Tennessee team.
I think you kind of hinted at something with the schedule there. I always try to build in an element of chaos to every schedule because you almost have to assume that every team not named Georgia is probably going to lose a game and maybe a game that we don't expect at the beginning of the season, and injuries are going to happen. So there could be something that impacts a team in a matchup that we don't anticipate in the fall. I do think it's interesting. You know, we talk about Tennessee's schedule, their first 3 games, the toughest offense they're going to play in there is NC State. I don't think we're going to know a ton about NC State at that point because Grayson McCall, the Coastal Carolina transfer, is coming over. Their defense is also going to be a work in progress early in the year. But then after that, you know, Jackson Arnold of Oklahoma, they're going to play Graham Mertz. They're going to play Jalen Milroe. They're going to play Carson Beck. You know, those are, you know, what, three, four of the best quarterbacks right there in the SEC? I mean, I know the SEC is pretty loaded this year at quarterback, and I'm kind of banking on Jackson Arnold taking a step forward. Graham Mertz, I think, will be in the upper half of the league. But Jalen Milroe's right up there. I mean, you could, he's top five by most this preseason, and Carson Beck's probably number one quarterback returning in college football. So I just, that's secondary for me. It goes back to what we talked about last week, is you lost, Tennessee lost a lot from the secondary. It could be a good thing in the sense of they didn't play that well anyways. Maybe they're replacing guys that are a little bit more different skill set that fits what they want to do schematically. On the other side, it is a lot of experience to lose in one off season and trying to replace it. And I like what they brought in through the portal. On paper, none of those guys look like really like high end, like first, second team all SEC type of impact right now. So maybe they have some others coming in after spring ball that will help. But that looks like to me the biggest glaring area of concern. And you add in what the SEC has at quarterback this year, that could really be problematic for Tennessee as they try to get to that college football playoff level this year.
And one final thing on Tennessee, Stephen, they kind of, I didn't realize this when Bill Connolly put out his returning production figures. Tennessee 94th nationally in total returning production, so that's a little bit of a cause for concern. I don't always buy into that because Alabama's 115th and they generally are around there. They're elite, but again, we shouldn't hold everyone to Alabama standards. But
can I play a little bit of devil's advocate in that number for Tennessee?
Sure.
So when you look at that number, offensively, they're 107th, and they're losing some of the running backs, which I think Jalen Wright and Jabari Small are big losses. But I think Tennessee is going to be fine at running back, and of course, they're losing Joe Milton, who was the starting quarterback. And Ramel Keaton's gone. I think they're going to be fine at the skill spots. I think Chris Brazel is going to come and make a huge impact. And assuming Brew McCoy gets healthy, I think that number offensively for Tennessee, I wouldn't, if I was a Vols fan, I would not be too worried about that returning production number on offense.
Okay. All right. We got Aaron. I believe he's an Arkansas fan. So let's do Arkansas next, Stephen. And again, they not officially or anything, but I mean, by all indication, Talen Green's going to be their starting quarterback. Bobby Petrino's over the moon on him. What's your realistic expectation for the Razorbacks?
I'm going to be a little bold here for Arkansas. I think with Sam Pittman on the hot seat, and I think acknowledging what you said earlier about progress, it's not always straightforward that you win four games, you win five, you're a better team. They could be 5-7 this year and be a better team. That might be enough for Sam Pittman to come back. But I think in order to say that there is clear progress and Sam Pittman deserves another year, it's got to be 6 wins. That's the bar for Arkansas. Early in the season, those two road tests, Oklahoma State went to the Big 12 championship game last year, Auburn, September 21st, like those stand out to me as two massive swing games for Arkansas to try to build some momentum as they go to try to get to that 6-win mark. Optimistically, I think I like the fact that, you know, Petrino, Talen Green seem to be on the same page. Petrino said a lot of good things about him this offseason. I'm still worried about the offensive line for Arkansas, and I think it'll be interesting to see if they continue to progress on defense. I think Landon Jackson is very underrated nationally, but they have a lot of new faces being asked to step up at linebacker. So I've got some concerns, but I think if you're Sam Pittman, I think 6 wins is kind of the bar you need to come back next year.
And maybe I'm just superstitious, I guess you could call it, Stephen, but do you buy into anything where, you know, these years we hype up certain teams, and I'm specifically looking at you, Arkansas. We just talked Tennessee. We could kind of put them in the same bucket. But the years we hype up these teams, they often fail to live up to those expectations. And then the years where, you know, I'm not saying we're writing these teams off, but maybe I know a lot of people are they're already writing off Sam Pittman. They're already writing off Bobby Petrino. They're writing off the fact that Arkansas can surprise a team or two. Do you buy into anything? Like, pressure's off you? Like, here's a perfect example, Stephen. Again, Tennessee, October 5th. Again, I think 9 out of 10 people in here would pick Tennessee to win that game. It's in Fayetteville. I don't think that's a given for Tennessee. I mean, hell, I've seen Tennessee lose to They lost to Florida last year. You know what I mean? Ole Miss. They have owned Ole Miss in Fayetteville. Again, this is maybe the best Ole Miss team that I've seen. So maybe that doesn't translate this season, but it could. Texas. Last time Texas came in there, they whooped them. Again, I realize this is a different Texas, but I don't know. I just don't think we can look at all these games and guarantee losses, particularly a lot of these home games I'm talking about. And with road games at Auburn, I know Auburn whooped them last year, but Hugh Freeze, he's hit or miss. Mississippi State on the road, who knows how good they're going to be. I'm trying to figure out a way to talk myself into beating the Missouri at Missouri. I won't go that far. But basically the point being, Steven, I think a lot of the away games are winnable, and the toughest games are at home. And any SEC schedule, there's not going to be an easy one, but give me the tough games at home. Give me a fighting chance there.
I think if you're Arkansas, maybe that thing that would encourage you about that Ole Miss game is the road trip to Fayetteville comes a week before Ole Miss plays Georgia. So it's got perfect trap game written all over it if you're Ole Miss, considering what you have to play the next week. I do buy into what you're saying. The pressure is sort of off for Arkansas. They closed last year just in awful fashion with the way that they lost to Auburn, the way they lost to Missouri. And you have a head coach in Sam Pittman who, when the job opened the last time, you know, I don't know too many people who put him at the top of the list for front runners, kind of someone who was just counted out, eventually got the head coaching job. You have an offensive coordinator who's got some baggage, but he's also got something to prove too. And I think he should be pretty hungry to sort of make amends for what happened the last time when he was at Arkansas. So I think you have a very hungry team. The expectations are going to be very low. They're going to be picked bottom four in the league this year. Kind of guess. I just think you have a lot of people with something to prove. Pittman, Petrino, throw Taylen Green in there because he's going to be questioned whether he can complete, you know, 60% of his passes against SEC defenses this year or whatever. So, yeah, I think Arkansas can benefit from being sort of the underrated hunter this year more than having some expectations placed on them.
All right. Hey, Cousin Rick, he wants us to talk Texas A&M. So we'll get to that in a minute, Steven. But real quick, Cousin Richard, he says the way the playoff is set up with the automatic bids, he believes it'll take 11 wins to get in the playoff for most teams. Of course, when it's nice that he says most teams, because we know Alabama, Georgia, Texas, they'll get the benefit of the doubt. They'll be the teams that don't need it. But for the rest of us poors, would you agree, Steven? Do you think you need 11, or is it a case-by-case basis? Because my understanding, there's still going to be like a committee, right? So I don't know. I think the perfect example, I've made this before, I talked with Cousin Shane about it. I don't believe I've talked with you about it, Steven, but you look at someone like Missouri's schedule, very favorable. But if you're going even 10-2 with this schedule, I don't know if Missouri gets in. It's depending on how if they lose by 1 point at Alabama, they lose to 1 point, maybe at A&M, maybe that's a different story. But short of something like that, I mean, you're almost forced to go to win 11 if you're Missouri, but I would spin it another way. Like, I know this is unrealistic, but let's say Florida goes 10-2 with this schedule. I think you got to put them in the playoff, you know?
Yeah, I think it's definitely case by case basis. Missouri finished eighth, I think, in the last playoff rankings from last season, and they had 10 wins in the regular season. So I think that's pretty close. I would say if you want to feel comfortable, it's 11. I think 10 is probably safe most years. I think there could be some 9-3 teams with a really difficult schedule that play their way in. Keep in mind, too, I think as we go forward in this playoff era, the Big Ten plays 9 conference games. If the SEC switches to 9 conference games, there's just going to be more losses. And at some point, the line between 9-3, 10-2 is going to get pretty blurry, to where the strength of schedule will matter. So I think if you're Missouri, there probably is a little, we're sitting here, I guess, in April, you know, this could change
early April,
right? Early April. this could change a lot by September. But I think if you're Missouri, like, leave no doubt, it would be to go undefeated. The second thing is to go like 11-1 and only with a close loss to Alabama or something.
All right, let's do A&M next, Steven. Cousin Rick, he says 5 teams will have 10 wins or more Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Texas, and A&M. Oh, he's giving love to the Longhorns. He's the only Aggie to do that. Sorry, LSU, Mizzou, Bama, and OU. I mean, just looking at this list, I mean, we're all expecting 10. This is going to be a wild season, Steven. So let's get into the Aggies here. I could meander all night. Realistic expectations, Mike Elko, year one, over under 8.5. Where do you got the Aggies in the debut season under Mike Elko?
I think I'm probably going to be one of the people that's a little bit optimistic on Texas A&M this year. Just because when I look at their schedule, there's no Georgia. There's no Alabama. There's no Ole Miss. There's no Tennessee. They don't even play Oklahoma this year. And their home games, Texas, LSU, Missouri, Notre Dame. Those are all getting those teams in College Station with that environment. They have an opportunity here in Mike Elko's first season. But I do think given the turnover and sort of the transition year that you have to go through sometimes with a new coach, I'm going to go with 9-3. I could be swayed to 10-2 because I do think that A&M will be a very interesting discussion this preseason in some of the rankings that you'll see with preseason predictions. Cause I'm very high on them, but I also think that because of their track record, because of the new coach, it wouldn't be surprised if some people are sort of underselling A&M this offseason.
Yeah, and I apologize, Steven. This is should have been case in point of the program that expectations, they ain't going to meet them. You don't have expectations for them, maybe they surprise. But so they probably want less and less people on the bandwagon, myself included. So I should probably sell all my stock in Texas A&M. But
Jimbo Fisher's not that coach anymore, Mike.
Exactly. But one thing I do love about the A&M schedule is just – so many of the marquee games at home. It's always a mistake, Steven, to get too caught up in the first week of the season and all that. But that Notre Dame game, I think, will tell us a lot. If, and I'm not saying it will happen. I don't think it will happen, but it could happen that, let's say, Notre Dame embarrasses Texas A&M. You know, I think that'll certainly cool the expectations, but let's say Notre Dame's top 10 preseason. They'll probably be somewhere in there. And even if A&M wins by 1 point, I think that sets you up to already right out the gates. A&M's back. Elko's bringing the thunder. You know, Jimbo's gone. Thank goodness. We paid him $100 million, but it was worth every penny to get rid of him because A&M's back. So is it wrong to put so much emphasis on that first game and maybe – even more important, well, obviously it is more important because it's a conference game. Week 3 at Florida. I think that's a game Billy Napier and company have to have circled as like a prove-it game. I know they got Miami right out the gate. Basically every game's circled for Billy Napier because he could be gone if he don't win some of these important ones. But I think if year one, Mike Elko, not that this is like a poor program that's in complete rebuild or anything, but if year one A&M goes into Gainesville and beats Billy Napier year 3, you might as well fire Billy Napier right away. So I think all the pressure is going to be on Florida in that one. What's a bigger game for the Aggies? Notre Dame week 1 at home or on the road week 3 at Florida? And when I say a bigger game, I'm just meaning like to have a great season, which one is more paramount that the Aggies win?
I would almost go with that opener against Notre Dame, because I do think Notre Dame is going to be a top 12 type team in the preseason. By the way, there are going to be some awesome like individual matchups in that Notre Dame game, because Notre Dame's defensive line is going to be picked pretty high this year. A&M's offensive line, Connor Wigman, they'll be tested right out of the gate. But I think that's sort of a tone setter. Like, you're getting a top 10 team potentially at your place. If you beat them in the opener, sort of sets the tone that as long as you don't go to Gainesville and lose in week 3, all that good momentum can kind of carry you to what probably is a 5-0 start based upon their schedule. So I just think from like out of the gate, opportunities, seize the momentum, new coach, sort of new era of Texas A&M football, beat Notre Dame, and that can really set the table for what could be a pretty nice season for Mike Elko.
Okay, and then Cousin Richard, he gave us that donation and the playoff question. He's a Mizzou fan, Steven, so let's tackle Mizzou. Again, I mean, a lot of schedule talk here, but again, I mean, how could you you got to remember, this is the only team in the entire SEC that if you take their opponent's records from last season, they're the only team of the 16 in the SEC that their combined opponent records was a losing record last year. So I don't want, I don't think that there's such a thing as an easy schedule in the SEC, but this comes pretty close, Steven.
Yeah. So I will set the bar high here for Missouri. I think it's 10 wins in the college football playoff. I think just based upon what we saw last season, we talked about it just a few minutes ago, they finished, you know, 10-2 in the regular season. They beat Ohio State. They were on the doorstep, if there was a 12-team playoff last year, of making it. The schedule was pretty easy. I do think you could go to, you could look at A&M on the road, maybe Mississippi State on the road, South Carolina. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they stumbled at one of those spots. That's kind of me building in a layer of chaos somewhere along the way in the SEC season. But, you know, that schedule combined with the success that Missouri had last year and what they have coming back and all the transfer portal additions, because offensively, I think this offense could really take off again in 2024, be even better than it was last year. It seems crazy to say that without Cody Schrader and Javon Foster, but you got Brady Cook back, who was one of the SEC's best quarterbacks last season. I love the receiving core. The two running backs, Nate Noel, Marcus Carroll, I think they're going to be fine. And then I think their biggest question really is on defense. New coordinator, not totally sold on the hire, but I'm sold on the transfer portal additions coming in and making an impact. And if your defense isn't as good as last year, your offense is probably good enough to carry you quite a long ways, because there's a ton of firepower coming back this year. So I think college football playoffs should be the expectation for Missouri, given personnel and schedule.
Right. And to your point, Stephen, so Missouri leads the SEC on the offensive side of the football in returning production, 79%. That's 16th in the entire country. Again, that's the best in the SEC. So I would go a step further. I mean, I think 11 win from Mizzou is completely realistic. And we're talking regular season, Steven. So who knows? I mean, Missouri could be playing in the SEC championship game. Wouldn't that be something if Mizzou, year and a half removed from fans wanting Drake fired, to maybe getting to the SEC championship? What a time to be alive, man, for Mizzou fans.
Yeah, I mean, what a difference like 1 year makes, what a difference like 2 years could make. I think it also goes to show you too, like the portal era of college football, and a lot of Missouri was Brady Cook and Luther Burden and, you know, obviously Cody Schrader offensively last season, but right coach, hiring the right assistants on both sides of the ball, good scouting, good evaluation in the portal, and also some, you know, work with NIL and all that on the recruiting trail. You know, Missouri's found the right formula. It's not necessarily that it happens right away, but it seems like Missouri has got the right formula now under Eli Drinkwitz. And it's important to continue that momentum, because I do think there will be some doubters nationally this year, just because teams come out of nowhere. People doubt them the next year. They think they're lucky. They think they're fortunate. I don't think that's the case in Missouri. I think that they're pretty legit and should be picked top 10 this year.
Mm-hmm. And then, so Cousin Jared, he's the only one that's next with a donation. He's a LSU fan, so we'll do them next. But if you want your team covered, hit us up with a donation. Otherwise, we'll try to go back. We have said to heck with going in alphabetical order. But how about LSU, Steven? I'll throw up their schedule. What's a realistic expectation year three under Brian Kelly?
I promise I'm not trying to make every team in the SEC make the college football playoff, but one thing that continues to jump out to me every time I look at LSU this year is I think their schedule is pretty favorable. I mean, they get Ole Miss at home. They get Alabama at home. Oklahoma also comes to Death Valley late in the season. They have to go, of course, on the road to Texas A&M. So I do think getting your toughest opponents, and they should absolutely beat UCLA and USC in the month of September, their schedule is pretty favorable. And I look at the defensive staff and I see a staff that is significantly improved from last year. Still have some question marks about some of the personnel, but I do think they can just be better just by having a better scheme and better coaching staff. I also believe in Garrett Nussmeier. I think he's going to have a good season. And we've seen Kyron Lacy and CJ Daniels some of the additions that they have at receiver. I think they'll be fine there. I don't think they'll be as good as Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. And of course, they've got one of the best offensive lines in the nation coming back. So I'm going 10 victories in college football playoff for LSU. They've won 10 games in each of Brian Kelly's first season. I know they're losing Jaden Daniels. Am I crazy?
I think you're a little crazy, Steve. No, I mean, crazy is maybe a strong word. I'm not buying into LSU quite yet. I like the additions they've made on the defensive staff. I like some of the guys they've had via the portal. I think they're going to be, you know, to your point, I think they're going to be a lot deeper than maybe a casual fan expects at receiver. I think they go about 6-7 deep. Not of first-round picks like they had last year, but I think they're going to be very deep at receiver. Maybe the best offensive line in the – maybe the country, if certainly the SEC, if they live up to their potential. So, well, Georgia will be right there as well. But
Texas,
yeah. Well, we're naming the elite of the elite. But the fact that you're in this category speaks to how elite you could possibly be there. But, yeah, I think I'm surprised each year that Brian Kelly, after losing the first game of the year, has been able to get to 10 wins each year. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
he's an elite coach. He finds ways to work around, and it's you know, as I'm saying this, it's like he's working around a roster that's not very good, but loaded with the Heisman Trophy winner and all these first round picks. But he just gets the best out of them. So if he continues to do that, certainly I would not have them as a playoff team today, but you beat Southern Cal, start out 1-0 for the first time under Brian Kelly. You start to change my mind on that pretty quick.
If LSU loses to USC, I cannot imagine what's going to happen on LSU message boards, because USC's got 7 returning starters and they've got big question marks on the offensive and defensive lines. And they had and last time I checked, I think Caleb Williams will be suiting up for the Bears in that game. So LSU, unless Mike Norvell is showing up on the sidelines of USC that game, I think LSU should be favored and probably should win. I would say convincingly, but with enough conviction that it's not close.
Right. All right. How about let's go alphabetical, Stephen, until we get another donation. Let's go Alabama here. Kayla DeBoer era kicks off here. And again, this is a tricky one here. They could be really good. They could crumble at the seams, and quite frankly, neither one would surprise me. I anticipate Alabama will be very, very good. Little drop off, but again, it's technically week 5, but the fourth game of the year, Georgia comes to town, and you could look like $1 million until Kirby Smart and company smacks you in the mouth. So what's your thoughts on Alabama?
I think the expectations should still be to make the college football playoff and win double-digit games. So 10 victories would kind of be my standard, you know, over under at 9.5. I think 10 wins. I mean, Alabama, the last time that they were under double digits was 2007. That was Nick Saban's first year. I think when you look at this team coming back for this year, there is going to be some sort of transition period. And that game against Georgia might just be a welcome to the SEC moment for Kalen DeBoer and staff. Because with what Georgia has coming back, I know going into Tuscaloosa is going to be difficult. But Georgia will be favored in that game. But if all of a sudden Alabama wins that game, we have a different conversation on September 29th. We're talking about maybe Alabama still being at the top of the SEC. It is interesting to think about. Alabama has been not necessarily boring, but it's almost like you just pencil them in under Nick Saban as top 5, you know, top 5 preseason. You assume they'll be in the SEC championship game every year. This year, they are much more of a bigger wild card than we've seen in some time. So they are in very fascinating territory for me in 2024, but I still think standard is 10 is double digit wins, the college football playoff, especially with Jalen Milroe coming back at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. I apologize, Stephen. I missed cousin Andrew. We did already talk Tennessee, but he gave us a donation. So I'm trying to rack my brain here for a Tennessee question real quick, just to cover his donation. But well, what do you think is more realistic, that Tennessee beats Alabama at home October 19th or Oklahoma on the road September 21st? Or maybe ask it this way. What will be the tougher test for Tennessee? Because I think that Oklahoma game is paramount to for a lot of reasons, where, I mean, Alabama certainly will be too. But I guess what I'm really asking you is how elite you think Alabama, and you kind of covered this just now, but it certainly sounds like you think Alabama is going to be pretty elite, but that home crowd can will Tennessee to victory. So what do you think will be the tougher test for the Vols?
Yeah, man, it's so close, because I do think that Tennessee can get Alabama at home. I mean, they did it last time, and Nick Saban's not on the staff. At least in an official capacity. He might be helping Cade Womack on the defensive side still. but I would still probably go with Alabama on October 19th. I think that's their tougher test. I think as I'm looking at Tennessee for this season, and we've talked a lot about their defense, I'm almost wondering if, you know, we talked about coordinators and how they could bust and how ruin a season. I almost think, like, this is make or break for Tim Banks. Because to me, if Tennessee doesn't make the playoff, it's not on the offense. They are probably going, unless Nico is just a five-star bust, which would be really surprising. If they don't make the playoff in the defense at the bottom of the league, I think Tennessee probably has a new defensive coordinator next year. Don't you think?
Right, especially given that they have James Pierce, who, again, yeah, some people are touting as a future potential number one overall pick. It's funny how many people get that type of acclaim, Stephen, but we all know it's just going to be a quarterback. So he's not going to be the top overall pick. It'll be a quarterback, but he could be the top defensive player taken. And Ken's saying, can the Vols stop the run? With their Rodney Gardner defensive line coach, they have been outstanding against the run. So I think Tennessee is going to be very deep on the defensive line. This should be the best defensive line in a decade plus at Tennessee. They have talent on defense, and they have gotten better. And even though they have completely blown up the secondary, there's talent abound. I mean, they're getting transfers that people are wanting. They're getting recruits that people are wanting. There's no excuses. They got the resources. I think you're making a valid point here, Stephen, because if they're not, the way Josh Heupel runs his system and the offense and the scoring that they should put up consistently, they don't need a top five defense or anything like that. But you just can't have these 60-point outings. You can't have these 50-point outings. You know, just hold the opponent to under 40. And Tennessee's probably going to win 10 games every year. You know what I mean? I don't think that's asking a lot. And if he can't get that done with the talent he has to work with, Tennessee should be able to afford an elite defensive coordinator.
Yeah, by year three, you've got your guys in the program, and especially in the portal era where you can be a lot more aggressive at turning over a roster, you start to have to produce some results. You know, it is interesting to look back at last year's losses for Tennessee. I mean, they got pushed around by Florida in that game. Alabama had the big second half comeback. They just got walloped by Missouri and Georgia. So high profile games for Tennessee. I think Tim Banks is really going to be under the spotlight to step it up and get this defense to another level, or at least, like you said, force turnovers, get the ball back to Nico, get stops in the red zone. It doesn't have to necessarily be pretty on the stat sheet, but you got to be effective in those moments.
All right. How about Ricky, cousin Ricky, Steven? He says it's 7:51 and Texas still sucks. Boomers. So let's do the Sooners next, Steven. Cannot wait for Oklahoma and Texas to get into this conference on the field this fall. What do you expect? I was blown away because I didn't know much about Texas and Oklahoma. I watched them all last year, and I realized, you know, they kind of petered out a little bit. But I was blown away by how fun Oklahoma was on offense, the strides they made on defense. I think this team is going to be coming in here ready to compete in the SEC. Where do you have the Sooners?
Mike, I think, you know, 8-4 or 7-5 seems about realistic to me. I mean, the over-under is 7.5. I do think when you look at Oklahoma for this season, and I'll kind of start with the history, they've only had one losing season since 1999, and that was Brent Venables' first year. But you saw the growth from year one to year two. And we saw that on the defensive side of the ball, especially where they got a lot better there. And I think they can take another step forward. I think they're doing the right things that they need to win in the SEC, building up the line of scrimmage, working on some of the facility, the off-field stuff that Oklahoma might have needed to catch up on with some of the other SEC teams. So I like what Brent Venables is doing. I'm a big fan of Jackson Arnold. I think he's going to have a breakout season. I am worried about the offensive line. I do think that that's going to be a group that Bill Bedenbaugh over the season will get better. But you look at those defenses. We talked about James Pierce going on the road to Auburn. Texas has some turnover. But Ole Miss has got Walter Nolan. They've got some other guys there. We know what Missouri's done, Alabama, LSU. That line will be tested right away. I think if Oklahoma's still in the Big 12, I actually think they're probably the expectations a lot higher. But I think coming into the SEC, I think 7-5, 8-4 seems about right for me. Am I underselling the Sooners there, Mike?
Absolutely. I'm just playing Cousin Shane. I'm over on everybody. But yeah, I mean, you're right. Somebody's going to have to take a step back. And I have even, this is wild, Stephen. I don't claim to be some insider that I'm not, but I have been told from people that would know that Brent Venables, I thought a year ago, I thought the guy was like coaching for his job. I didn't know if he's going to be a head coach for very long. I didn't know if he would make it to the SEC. I was wildly surprised by how they performed last year. So that's a credit to him. But I've also been told, Stephen, that if he doesn't have a good year this year, they're going to pull the plug on him, which that caught me off guard. But again, this is a different challenge. There ain't no more Kansas on here, which hell, they lost to Kansas last year. So there's not those teams out there. This is the SEC. This is a big year for Brent Venables. I think they'll answer the challenge. I think they're closer to 9 wins, but again, I'm wrong about as often as I'm right. So I don't know.
Josh Heupel, do not answer your phone if you're getting phone calls from the Norman, Oklahoma area, I guess, after this regular season, if Brent Venables thinks they'll work out there. But, you know, Mike, I think when you look at Oklahoma's schedule last season in the Big 12, you know, swapping out like Cincinnati, UCF, you know, you mentioned Kansas, West Virginia, BYU. I mean, this schedule this year is significantly more difficult just going into the SEC, playing, you know, Tennessee in the opener for the SEC. You also have to play a pretty good Tulane team. So this is a very things are going to be a lot different in an SEC slate for Oklahoma.
Yeah, I caught everything you said there, Stephen. I don't know if you can hear me, but
I can hear you. I was trying to stall time. I probably wasn't doing very good.
Everything I own got kicked off there, so I apologize. But I appreciate you for soldiering on there. I gotta make sure I gotta turn on this light real quick. But, all right, how about Auburn, Stephen? Let me throw up their schedule real quick here. That's not one that we've talked about.
I think the first thing that jumps out to me about Auburn this year is their schedule. Just the fact they have the first 5 games at home, not to mention 3 games later in the season. Like if you're Hugh Freeze looking at those games and you get Oklahoma, Arkansas, Texas A&M, you know, some swing type games at your place early and late in the season, there's an opportunity to make up some ground. So I think after what was a pretty interesting first year for Hugh Freeze with all the coaching turnover, the sluggish offense, all the changes they made, I think you got to go with 8-4, just seeing how favorable to some extent that schedule is. Year two, if you want to keep showing signs of progress, I think 8-4 would be a realistic expectation for Auburn.
All right, I think I'm back. Can you hear me at least?
I you're back, yeah.
Again, I heard everything you just said, Stephen, and I'm just laughing here because, I mean, if there's one team I got to pile on, it's Auburn. It's Auburn at Hugh Freeze. I've been reading the Meat Market. I've been reading The Blind Side and just, I don't know, man. I don't know, Stephen. Again, I get it. We nearly won the Iron Bowl.
Nearly beat Georgia.
Hugh Freeze nearly done a lot of things, Stephen, but he's not impressed me. I don't know. I don't know where we're at here. Again,
no showed against New Mexico State and Maryland.
I can't just go over on everybody. So if there's one I'm going under on, I'm going under on Auburn. I don't get it. I mean, he's firing all these coaches. He's sticking with his average quarterback, which, hey, I'm happy to be wrong again. But I don't know. I don't think, unless we get some kind of Hugh Freeze magic here, which I don't even think he's capable of. I think he's horribly overrated because he beat Nick Saban twice. People never mention he lost to Vanderbilt twice. But I don't know. I'm not buying it. And I don't think his method of just trying to focus on high school recruiting, I don't think that's going to work either.
Is the staff for Auburn better this year in your mind, or do you think it's worse?
No, it's worse. What he's done is he's gotten all these guys that he had connections with at Ole Miss that nearly 10 years ago. I don't even think they were that good of a staff then. You know what I mean? He's kind of he's got the old gang back together after one season of trying to go with the same kind of Art Briles offense, and that, I mean, clearly that didn't work. And Ron Roberts, you know, I've heard mixed things about him, but he landed on his feet pretty quickly, I'll say that. And he's at Florida, which, again, that could be a disaster too. I think that was a good hire, but it could be a disaster. I don't think defense was the problem at Auburn, but clearly chemistry within that coaching staff was a huge issue.
Yeah, I have to admit, I think DJ Durkin and Charles Kelly are kind of, they're okay. They're fine hires, like, but they would not make my list of like best SEC assistant hires, and they certainly would not make the best national hires. When you look at, to me, this, although all this, you know, we're talking about Hugh Freeze here. To me, his side of the ball is the offense. 25 points a game last year in SEC play. Mike, I don't know about you, but I didn't see a ton of growth during the season. I know they are a little bit limited in terms of personnel with the first year of a quarterback transfer, and they had a lot of new pieces on the offensive line and receiver. I think out of the gate, you need to see some big-time improvement offensively to feel better. But also, I think you and I have talked about this too. Like with Florida, there is sort of a proof of concept element too. If you want to try to catch Georgia and Alabama and beat them on the recruiting trail, you got to win some games. So I think it's important to sort of show that proof of concept, and that's getting to 8-4 this year.
I appreciate you, Cousin Rick. He just gave me money for my light bill here. I do appreciate that. But I don't know. I'll be happy to be wrong there, but I'm not buying what old Hugh is selling there. I think, we essentially kicked Gus to the curb to get Gus with baggage. That's Mike, how I feel about it.
Mike, every time, I don't know if you remember this, but a few weeks ago we started talking about Auburn and my internet went out. We started talking about Auburn this time. Your lights went out.
Yeah. I mean, he's outside. He's pulling the plug on there, no doubt. All right. How about the Florida Gators?
Mike, I think the expectations should be 6-6. You know, this is sort of the same thing with Arkansas, and you have a coach on the hot seat. Like 6-6 ought to be the expectation if you're Billy Napier, or at least the bare minimum if you want to come back next season. Yes, the schedule is very difficult, but at the same time, they're fourth in the SEC in returning production. I think you have to think that the offense will be fine. You brought in Ron Roberts, who's worked with Billy Napier before. I think they've done some good things on the recruiting trail and a transfer portal to sort of fortify that depth on defense. So if you're Florida, a difficult schedule, 6-6 is not the standard, but I think that would equal improvement and also be a realistic goal this year, given what they have coming back and some swing games for the schedule too.
So if Florida goes 6-6 again, I honestly, Steven, I think they'll do even better than that, that surprises people when I say that, but let's assume they go 6-6 or better, and let's just look at SEC teams here. I would have to imagine they must pull off at least one upset in conference play to get there. Who are we looking at that you think is most likely? And again, I don't even think we're looking at Mississippi State. We may be looking at Kentucky, although that is a home game. I would anticipate, despite Kentucky winning three in a row, I would anticipate Florida being favored in that game, but I don't know if you do. Who are you looking at as possible SEC upsets if Florida gets to 6-6 or better?
What about Texas A&M on September 14th? You know, this kind of goes to our Notre Dame conversation where early in the season, it could sort of set the tone. Like if you're A&M and you go on the road to Gainesville and you get a huge win, that's another big check mark for Mike Elko. But also you're going to be facing a pretty motivated Florida team. And I think my second kind of guess here was going to be Ole Miss before the Egg Bowl. But also if you're worried about Billy Napier, by November, he might not be the head coach. And at that point, who knows what the Florida program looks like. So I think it's early in the year. I think you got to get A&M at home in Gainesville early in the season if you're Florida, if you want to get to that six wins.
Well, devil's advocate, Stephen, what if it's Napier got fired? So we get, we got a Coach O situation. Who would our Coach O be? Would it be Rob Sale? Would it be Rod Roberts? Surely it wouldn't be Austin Armstrong, who's like 15 years old. But whoever the interim is, let's say they rally behind him. They got their five-star freshman quarterback. Maybe he's awesome. And maybe later in the season they kind of come on. Could you buy that at least?
Dan Enos is
Oh my goodness. Yeah, if we were tanking for draft picks, that would be a suitable choice.
Yeah. Lane Kiffin. He comes to Gainesville on November 23rd. Is he house shopping by then? I'm just joking. But no. I think if let's just hypothetically here, if Florida was to open later in the season, I think they could, I think sometimes we see there is a new coach bump. Like we saw this last year with Arkansas, like they got rid of Dan Enos. That game against Florida, they went down and won. They could get a new coach bump late in the season. And plus two, what does Ole Miss from a chemistry standpoint, if things were to go kind of in the wrong direction, if they're not in the playoff contention, what does LSU look like? There are some big questions there, I think, for how Florida's schedule could look late in the season. But hypothetically, if Florida was to open, this would be a very, very attractive job for a lot of coaches next season.
Yeah, Jared just gave me $10. He said, take at Mississippi State helmet down, put an LSU one up there. So that's what I was doing there. But I do appreciate you. But yeah,
this is dangerous to be doing this after we already lost the Lions.
All right, Stephen, how about Georgia? And I guess we already know likely where you're headed with the Dogs. But here, Stephen, here's the thing. And I've said this many times. I've said it to you a couple of times. I know Shane's tired of me saying it. But I think their schedule is maybe just as hard as Florida's. When you look at Bama on the road, Texas on the road, Ole Miss on the road, Clemson and Florida, not at home, neutral sites, but, the toughest home games you got, Tennessee and Auburn. I'm not saying they're going to lose a lot of these games or anything, but I think because Georgia is so good and likely that, them and Ohio State, I think they're going to be overwhelming favorites to win it all for whatever that's worth. People are not looking at this schedule and saying, man, that's a brutal slate, even though I think it is.
I think it's a really difficult slate. Now, I think the good news is if you're Georgia, the 12-team playoff allows you a little bit of flexibility. Like if you were to lose two games on this schedule in the 4-team playoff era, you'd be out. In this one, you're probably still getting in, given how difficult it is. But with that being said, Mike, I think the expectation is the national championship. They won two in a row. They fell short last season in the SEC championship game. If there was a college football playoff that had 12 teams last year, I think it's fair to say that the 2023 Georgia Bulldogs would be somebody you do not want to play. There are not many question marks about this roster. There are a few things defensively I think you want to see shored up. But offensively, with the way that Kirby Smart's been talking up this offense all spring, and with what they have coming back, I think the expectation is to win the SEC and win the national championship.
Mm. Who gives them the best game, you think, Stephen? I assume it's going to be one of the road games, but where would you lean with that most likely team to upset Georgia?
Man, I think it's either Alabama or Texas. Ole Miss November 9th, maybe. I mean, but we saw Georgia take, beat up Ole Miss pretty good last year. Granted, it was in Athens, and these are different teams. If you asked me to pick one, I probably would go with Alabama September 28th in Tuscaloosa. Close with Texas right behind it.
Okay. I like where your head's at. I mean, I'm just looking at it. Again, I think they're going to be great, but it's going to be, it's not going to be easy.
And I think it's going to be hard to go undefeated for sure.
Right. And that's the point. I don't think anybody's going undefeated in the SEC this year, given these slates that we have, but it's going to be fascinating to see. All right. How about Kentucky, Stephen? Another one that's very, very difficult to gauge here on what they are. New offensive coordinator, new quarterback, new offensive line coach, but talent around a lot of those positions. Brock Vandegrift, won't he live up to the hype? That's going to be interesting as well. What's your realistic expectation for the Wildcats?
Let me see if you agree with me on something. I think there are four games that they will be an underdog in: Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Texas. I think Florida, they'll be favored, but that could be closer to a toss-up. Maybe, I don't know. That's the one that I keep going back and forth on. Do you agree with that?
Depending on how good that Auburn is, it is in Lexington, but I could see Auburn being a favorite there, but I would tend to agree with you. I think Kentucky would be favored against Auburn at home.
So I think if that's kind of the baseline of favorites, I think it's got to be 7-5 for Kentucky. I think that this is a Kentucky team that fascinates me because of everything that happened at the end of last year with Mark Stoops. Was the head coach for at Texas A&M for like 10 minutes. And then back in Lexington, Brock Vandegrift, so much pressure on an unproven quarterback, albeit one with a lot of upside, new offensive coordinator. But, you know, you look at everywhere else, they bring back the most returning starters in the SEC on defense with 9. And you have to like, I think, the skill talent too. Barry Brown, Dane Key, a lot of guys back on the offensive line. If the quarterback for Kentucky hits, and I think maybe 8-4 becomes a little bit more realistic, but I think they got to get to 7-5. I think Stoops kind of has to show this program is not just 5-7, 6-6. Getting above 500 would be a good step in the kind of right direction after everything last year.
Now, I swear, Stephen, I'm not trying to troll or anything here, but I just thought of something here. I'll throw up this Kentucky schedule one more time. That because we got Liquid Flames in here, loyal listener, watcher, whatever you want to call it. He said, hey, this is the year. This is the year Florida beats Kentucky. And it's so funny how that's flip-flopped because it was for 3 decades, Kentucky was swearing this was the year they beat Florida, but now Florida can't beat them. But can you think of a game that will have more pressure for a head coach? Let's just keep it a head coach strictly, but more pressure for a head coach than Florida's Billy Napier to beat Kentucky come October 19th. In the swamp. I realize Napier's going to have pressure all basically every game, like I said, every meaningful game. But I can't see him keeping his job if he loses to Kentucky at home.
Yeah, especially with the way last year's game kind of played out. You know, the fact that Kentucky just physically took it and dominated Florida and frankly kind of embarrassed Florida in Lexington. If Kentucky goes down to Gainesville and does that again, yeah, I would agree with that.
And do you remember what Billy Napier said after that game? It was something to the effect of, that's what we want to look like. And it's you're Florida. You can't, right. I don't care that Kentucky looks that way. You cannot say that as Florida's coach because the fan base is going to turn on you that you're saying you want to be Kentucky. But, you know, he's talking about physicality, running the ball. I get it. But you cannot say that as a Florida coach. You just can't.
And the last, I mean, Mullen wasn't very good at the end of his tenure about kind of sort of reading the room. That's probably a good example of not reading the room after a loss.
All right. How about Mississippi State, Stephen? I'm fascinated to see what they look like. I hope they turn it around quickly under Jeff Lebby, make them fun. Cause they're some of the best fans in the entire country that show up every single year for this team. And I mean, no need to rehash what happened last year, but can they turn it around? How quickly? Realistic expectations, Jeff Lebby, year one.
I'm going to go a little on the low side with expectations, and I'm going to go with 4-8. And I think winning one game in SEC play would be a good sign for Jeff Lebby. And I think it's really just for this reason. They only return 3 starters. That's the fewest of any team in the SEC. Mm-hmm. It's a complete roster overhaul. It's a complete scheme overhaul. There are a ton of transfers coming in. Keep in mind, last year they only had one loss in SEC play by one score. They were flat out dominated the rest of the way. So I think 4-8, but also I think there is an element of, does Mississippi State just look more competitive? Do they look well coached? Is there progress during the season? I think that would be a success for this team if they're just more competitive and they looked like the coaching staff is doing the right things to make them more competitive over the season.
Mm-hmm. And this is almost the inverse of the Arkansas schedule, Stephen, that I was getting excited about, because I said, well, at least all your difficult games are at home. Here, all the difficult games are on the road. I think we're going to get more of the same of the blowouts in conference play, at least on the road. Where you got to steal some is Florida, Arkansas, A&M, and maybe, even though it seems difficult, but Mizzou at home. And I'm just not seeing I mean, I'm kind of right there with you. I would be surprised if they could split. I wouldn't be stunned, but I'd be surprised if Mississippi State could split at home in those conference games.
I think, like I said, I think just one would almost be a successful season. But if they get to two, all of a sudden you start talking about, like, you know, you're start talking about bowl game if you can pick off two of those. I think just considering the circumstances, and this is a case too we'll talk about with Clark Lee. Progress, like you said, is not necessarily zero or one in the win column. If they're just more competitive week to week, I think that's a good sign for Mississippi State. It's just such a year zero type for a head coach, and that is perfect kind of way to describe what Jeff Lebby's going to be dealing with this year.
Yeah, Cousin Shane's in the comments. He says Mississippi State's going to a bowl game. Cousin Jerry says, put that can down, Cousin Shane. All right, how about South Carolina, Stephen? An interesting team this year with Shane Beamer. Here's another one. I don't know what to make of them. They surprised 2 years in a row, and then they disappointed last year. So maybe this is another candidate for low expectations, could actually help the Gamecocks. What's your realistic expectations here?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think we kind of saw that at times in the first two seasons for Shane Beamer, just the fact that the expectations were lower. They caught fire at the end of the season, especially at the end of that 2022 season. And, of course, they went over Tennessee. They went and beat Clemson. So I think given the fact that South Carolina starts a first-timer at quarterback, and there are question marks on the offensive line and certainly the defense once again, I'm going to go with 6 wins in a bowl game. I think their schedule is difficult, but I think if you're Shane Beamer and you want to show this program is sort of back on track after a 5-7 season and a season where a lot went against you, very difficult schedule, ton of injuries, 6-6, and Lenore Sellers taking a big step forward and showing you that, hey, he's the guy, we can build on this in 2025. So 6-6 to me seems pretty realistic.
And where do you stand on this, Stephen? Because I believe I'm looking at the numbers here. Yeah, South Carolina, number 2 in the SEC in returning production on the defensive side of the football. That's top 20 in the country. It's number 18 in the entire country. But the defense was not that good. So, again, is that what do you read into that? When a unit that it was not – I mean, they weren't awful by any means, but at times they were, particularly against the run. But – When a team was not very good, but they're bringing back a ton of production, does that give you a feeling that there'll be a big improvement, or where do you stand on that?
I think maybe the biggest reason for optimism is kind of something that you and I talked a little bit about last week, was usage of the 3-3-5. They may have found something on defense a little bit later in the season. I like what they did at the portal too. I think they got some guys up front that can be impact type players, and they really need that stop the run to get after the quarterback better this season. But they gave up only 16 points to Clemson, 14 to Kentucky, 6 to Vanderbilt. I know that's not the juggernaut of offenses, but late in the season they did play better. So I think the hope has to be you're bringing back, I think, 7 starters on defense, a lot of production, you played better at the end of the season. Like, you can kind of translate all that into something better this year just because of the volume of players coming back, plus some, I think, upgrades at certain positions too from the portal.
You hear a lot of hot seat when it comes to Beamer, not just with fans more than anything, but how many I know you said 6-6, but what? How many wins do you think Beamer needs to get to kind of quiet all that talk? Is it 6-6, or what's your thoughts on that?
I think 6-6 would do it, but I think 7-5 is sort of like the statement. Like, if you go 7-5, mm-hmm. considering the questions that South Carolina has, there was zero doubt about hot seat because the schedule's tough and you get a lot of questions come into this year. So 7-5 would definitely, I think, kind of quiet the critics for Shane Beamer.
And one other thing I got on Carolina. This will be year four. So, you know, in the portal era and all that, I mean, these are, I would have to think exclusively Shane Beamer guys now. If we failed to meet expectations last year, if we fail to do it again, like say we go 4-8 or 5-7, I mean, I like the guy. I want him to succeed, but I would begin to wonder, would it be fair to wonder if, you know, that he was mostly winning with Muschamp guys and hit the jackpot in the portal, so to speak, with someone that he had a previous relationship with in Spencer Rattler, of course.
I think that's a fair question. That's why I think I don't think Shane Beamer's on the hot seat, but I think it's fair to say, like, the temperature's getting a little warmer. And I think what happens this year could be pretty telling, because I think there's a case that we could talk like, hey, they finished 5-7, but they also were a lot better. Like, they could be competitive. We could look at Lenora Sellers and say, he was pretty solid this year, but what about next year? You're going to be able to get some more guys around him. You could take a step forward in 2025, and you're setting yourself up for a big season. They had, of course, the two five stars in this recruiting class, which is good, but that also gets at the proof of concept thing. You've got to keep winning to sort of build on that. So I think we are not necessarily fork in the road type territory, but I do think this is an important year for Shane Beamer to sort of show that there still is plenty of proof of concept and this program is trending still in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about Texas, Steve? We haven't talked Texas yet. Highest over under win total tied with Georgia for 10.5. Realistic expectations for the Longhorns, who think they're going to come in and dominate this league. I don't know what drugs they're on. What drugs are they on there, Steven?
Mike, I think they're on the 10-2 is a realistic expectation drug, because that should be what Texas is looking at this year. They should be able to win double digits. They should go back to the college football playoff. They were a couple plays away at the end of the game against Washington from winning that and going to the national championship game. I think it'll be different in the SEC, obviously. That Sarkisian has done a very good job of building up the roster to this point. I do have some question marks along the defensive line and in the secondary, but you've got someone, Quinn Ewers, coming back. They've got a ton of firepower. Also, their schedule's pretty easy. I mean, Michigan in week two is going to be in real rebuild mode. Oklahoma's always going to be a toss-up game. They get Georgia at home. They get A&M on the road. I think that's pretty – for a team transitioning to the SEC, that's about as good of a schedule as you could ask for if you're Texas. Would you agree, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they clearly did Texas some favors for some reason. I don't know why. And, oh, yeah, they get the same schedule next year, yeah. in 2025, thanks to laziness in the league office there. But – let me ask you this, Steve. You got to pick one or the other. Undefeated, regular season, I'm talking here, or 8-4. Which is and you have to pick one. Which is more realistic for Texas coming into this conference, undefeated or 8-4?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I'll be bold. I'll say undefeated season. I think getting Georgia at home, albeit the week after playing Oklahoma, is not ideal. I would just be really surprised. I know the expectation of Texas is they are probably underachieved. They kind of got rid of all those demons last season by making the college football playoff. So I'll be bold. I think there's a better chance of this team going undefeated. I like their chances of being preseason top five for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, everything you hear out of Austin, they're loaded. They may not even need to add anybody out of the portal, they're saying. So, but yeah, I can't wait to watch it. All right, final team here. I'm surprised, Steven. We had no Vanderbilt donations. We never do. The only time we get a Vanderbilt donation is when someone else is, just feels bad and is like, please give Vandy some love. So realistic expectation. Oh, man, I still don't have the – I've corrected this, but I've not updated the correct one here. Where we got for I'm so disrespectful to Vanderbilt, I don't even have the correct schedule up there. But it should be Alcorn week two, and then that first game is not neutral. I don't know what I was drinking that day.
I mean, it might be neutral because Virginia Tech's probably going to bring a lot of fans to the stuff. To be fair, I think in all seriousness, I think a kind of good season, a reasonable season for Vanderbilt would be at least winning three of those non-conference games. I think they're going to be an underdog to Virginia Tech in the opener. They have to go to Georgia State, which will Del McGee, the former Georgia running backs coach, is now the head coach there. Will be a little tricky. But I think if I'm a Vanderbilt fan, three wins isn't enough. You've got to find some win in SEC play because that would be progress, is getting to 4-8, winning one in the SEC. So I'm going to be bold. I'm going to go 4-8 and one win in the SEC. And also, a sign of progress could just be being more competitive in the SEC because they were just completely dominated all their losses by double digits last year within the SEC.
Yeah. Well, I hate to do it, Stephen, but I'm going to have to disagree with you. And I think they're even worse this year, which is sad. But because it feels like a year zero. And I know you've made the point, hey, if we go winless again in conference play, time to give Clark Lee his papers. But I don't necessarily think it – this is so sad, Stephen. But I think they have proven that they have a solid ability to identify, recruit, and develop players. But the problem for them is they had no NIL and all their players left for NIL opportunities, which how can you blame them? But now they're in on NIL. So now they're getting guys, but they were obviously late to the party and it killed their roster. So I don't know how in the world we even evaluate them this year. That's why I call it a week zero for Clark Lee and company. And that's sad, but I think that's where we're at. And I hope I'm wrong.
If I was to ask you, and I think this is kind of where you're going with this one, I think if I had to ask you during the season last year, who would be Vanderbilt's like building blocks for 2024? I think you probably would have said what Jaden McGowan, probably Will Shepard, DeRicky Wright. We'll see if he comes back to Vanderbilt.
AJ Swan, who's now at LSU. You know what I mean? Like, just all these players that they all, and again, how can you blame them? Nobody wants to sit around and get your head beat in and not get paid when you can go somewhere else and win and get paid. That's the name of the game. And if you do not want to play that game, then get out of major college football, because that's what it is now. And you're getting the TV money. And I realize the TV money's got nothing to do with NIL, but there are avenues and they're doing it now which was so stupid of an argument to blame NIL when you have NIL now, but you didn't have it a couple months ago. It makes no sense.
Yeah. I think the approach that worked at Vanderbilt, like with Bobby Johnson, you know, sort of recruiting and developing and building up, Clark Lee could be good at that, but I think it's just going to be really hard to keep. You have to recruit, develop, and now you have to retain, which is what Vanderbilt's going to have to get better at. Because I think as we go forward in this season, I'm setting the bar at 4, but also if they just win 3 games and they're more competitive in the SEC, and at the end of the year, we could look and say, he's coming back, this guy's coming back on offense, and they can build around that for 2025, that is a step forward. Like, that is the year zero. Like, you're talking that Vanderbilt's reset, they've got the NIL. I think you could sell that as progress if you're Clark Lee, but they've got to find some building blocks, because right now, I don't know, Cedric Alexander, Langston Patterson, CJ Taylor, like those are probably Junior Sherrill. Maybe there's some guys that are at least coming back next year that could be interesting for Vanderbilt.
Yeah. And the biggest news is with that relegation piece, which again, hopefully for their sake doesn't come into fruition, but if it does, that's who they're looking at, is you, Vanderbilt. So you may have to get your house in order. But All right, Stephen, we went nearly 90 minutes, even though it took us about 20 minutes because of technology and all that good stuff. Before you go, as always, can you tell the audience how can they follow you? How can they find your work?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at AthlonSteven. You can check out all my work at AthlonSports.com. We're also working on the Athlon Sports Preview Magazine, which will be on newsstands in early June. So that's pretty exciting as well. You can also follow me on YouTube, AllCFB365, and StephenLCFB on Instagram and Facebook.
All right, Stephen, thanks again for joining me. I always appreciate our chats. Thank you to each and every one of you who hung out with us. And like I said, we got off to a late start. My light bill kicked off. I had to call them up, get that turned on in the middle of a live stream. So I appreciate you being a trooper there, Stephen, with all my technical difficulties. But hey,
Mike needs some SEC, some of the SEC TV contract checks to clear.
Yeah, I'm on Vanderbilt's NIL deal. But, you know, I get a couple nickels a month here. So, but that it is what it is. I appreciate each and every one of you, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.